Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 12th of June. Very nice to have you with us on this day and another beautiful day in the neighborhood. And we are thrilled to be with you. I don't know about you. I was up most of the night watching the coverage and a little bleary eyed, but it was fun Well, it wasn't all that fun, but you know, it was interesting. It was fascinating to watch, wasn't it? It was fascinating. So we're going to talk about all of that this morning. The music we just heard coming in was from Grizzly Bear. Grizzly Bear, I know that's on your playlist, JP. Grizzly Bear playing at Mass Mocha on Saturday. That's the 16th of June, and you can find out more at massmocha.org, and they'll be performing our music in and out of our breaks throughout the morning. Our friends at Mass Mocha, we love them, and massmocha.org, but Grizzly Bear performing on Saturday the 16th.
Joe, I wonder if Grizzly Bear is related to Irving. Irving comes to our house every night.
Oh, Irving the Bear?
Irving the Bear, and people call the cops, and the cops say, "Well, don't worry about him. It's just Irving."
Who named him Irving? Did you name him Irving?
I believe it got lost in the translation. I know that when I first heard the story about somebody calling cops about the bear who roams our hills, our homes, that the cops said, "Oh, that's just so and so." So I substituted the name Irving.
I see. Well, I have to tell you, if they play that kind of music, I'm coming to your place and listening. Because that's great stuff. Grizzly and Irving.
Grizzly and Irving. Yeah.
But I think Grizzly Bear is really good.
There's some hillbilly Jewish joke hidden there. I just can't figure out what it is.
All right. Well,
walked into a bar.
You have an hour and a half to figure it out.
Yeah, so. We walk into a bar.
Good morning. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get started and talk about the news of the day. Hey, guess what? There's a lot of it. Libby Post is here. She was here yesterday. She's here today. Thank God. She is a political consultant and knocking them out of the park in her job and here on the show. And we're thrilled to have her. Libby Post, good morning. How are you?
Good, dear. How are you?
Always good to see you.
I'm glad you're not as blurry-eyed as some others are.
No, it's just it was sort of fascinating watching this. Any way you look at it, it's history.
It's
really fascinating stuff.
This is very true.
J.P. Miller is our good friend. He is the founder and the proprietor of Empire Report, and he is
a must read.
A must read, indeed it is. And he is with us each Tuesday. Today is Tuesday, and we're thrilled to have him. Good morning, sir.
Morning, Joe.
Very nice to see you. Mike Spain joins us today as well. He's a Tuesday regular, and thrilled to have Mike back, as always, associate editor of the Times Union. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you. And Alan Chartok is with us, and I know, Alan, you were up early, up late, watching all this going on.
No, well, I got a couple hours, as I guess in my want, but I was up, and I watched all of it I watched. But yesterday I had a most unpleasant experience.
Uh-oh, tell us about that.
Well, Libby and I had a little bit of an argument as she left the place. Yeah, it was just water.
How did I miss that? You left friends. What happened?
Water off our backs.
We always leave friends.
It had to do with Cynthia Nixon versus Andrew Cuomo. And Libby thought that Cynthia may not be ready for major league, you know, ball.
Prime time.
Yeah. And I respond, you know, that she had to know how to run a government. I said, yeah, with your closest associates, you know, your closest associates going to jail and all like that. That's how you do it. So Libby and I are maybe a little bit contentious on this issue. Don't you think, Libs?
Well, we don't agree.
That's
but that doesn't
meant.
Mean we're contentious.
Doesn't mean I don't love you.
That's right. It doesn't mean I don't love you and appreciate you and you know.
What do you appreciate about me?
I'm not going to suck up too much.
Don't let your cover be blown.
Yeah,
for God's
I know
sakes.
It's true.
People have ideas in their minds.
I mean, this is going to be an ongoing discussion between now and the primary about who's more better suited, what the issues are. You know, Junani Williams, her lieutenant governor partner, I guess, has some sordid past when it comes to choice and gay rights. He was vehemently opposed, and now he's had an epiphany, and he now supports.
That, sort of like Gillibrand.
Yes, but yes, you do. But you also want to know how deep that epiphany runs. So we'll see. I mean, this is going to be a conversation all of us will continue to have until primary day, and then we move on from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Want to weigh in on this, JP?
I think Cuomo's doing an excellent thing with his gun. He's taking the...
The school bus around the state?
Yes, the red gun, not his gun.
I think it's brilliant. Yep. It's a great way for him to kick off the summer political season, and I'm excited to see how he and Cynthia Nixon battle over the summer. It's going to be awesome.
I gave him credit for it on my early morning commentary for the gun thing, because I think it's his best. It's Cuomo at his best.
Yeah. When he's out there, he's good.
Well,
you know,
good is a... difficult
term. It's never going to be a superlative for you, so it's okay.
With him?
Yeah.
Right.
All right, let's talk about the big story here, which, of course, is the meeting between President Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un of North Korea. Their first meeting, a big step in an improbable courtship, and a joint statement short on details. Mr. Kim endorsed complete denuclearization. Mr. Trump committed to security guarantees for the North. Sanctions against the country will remain. The meeting, it started last night, everything went sort of according to Hoyle, as far as time-wise, about 9 o'clock, the president shook hands with Kim Jong-un. And then the two went into a meeting about 48 minutes long with just translators. The two leaders and two translators were in the room. The press was allowed in the room right before. Did you hear that the interesting thing was that they had the meeting outside, they had the handshake, and then they asked to come inside and have the press take a picture of them while they were sitting down. And apparently that was because Kim Jong-un said he didn't want it looked sort of odd because there's a height difference. So they sat him down and I thought, well, that's good. I would want. Yeah.
There's a slightly different photograph running in the North Korean papers today than we see in the United States papers. Showing him of the same height, I imagine, as Trump, right?
Yeah.
Well, he does, you know, it's called lifts.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, what? Who cares? It's the fact that they're on equal footing, yes, or equal whatever.
Shoes. Well, as an aside, I noticed that at the G7 conference the G6 conference in Canada the other day, Justin Trudeau actually stands taller than our president. Yep. I didn't realize that.
And why do you think he's having such problems? All about size for this man.
That's it.
It's all about size.
I like it.
All right. So President Trump shook hands and offered a major concession during his first summit meeting between their nations, a momentous step in an improbable courtship. Brash, impulsive leaders who only a few months ago taunted each other across a nuclear abyss. Mr. Trump and Mr. Kim set aside their threats in a gamble that, for now at least, personal diplomacy can counteract decades of distrust. Emerging from a day of talks in Singapore and speaking to reporters for more than an hour, Mr. Trump said that he was suspending joint military exercises with South Korean forces and that he was confident Mr. Kim would begin dismantling his nuclear arsenal very quickly. But Mr. Trump said economic sanctions against the North would remain in place until the North did more. That seems what you would want, right?
Yes, but the question is South Korea okay with suspending these military things?
And he sort of acknowledged that. Okay. He said South Korea might be doing something, you know, on their own. We know that China has been doing something on their own to loosen the sanctions. And he talked about that and how he wasn't, Trump, and how he wasn't happy about that.
I mean, you know, if somehow the war can be declared over and they can actually work together, the two countries.
Notably, that did not happen. There was speculation that they would announce an end to the 64 years ago. The hostility stopped, I guess, or the hostility continued, but the warfare stopped in Korea, and we only had an armistice, and they wanted to make it an actual peace treaty, and that's something I guess we can look forward to. But
yes. And
technically
yet,
speaking,
we're still at war. But
and yet the big issue here was the givebacks that Trump has done. Most of the people, Christine Amanpour and so many others, are saying that we gave up more than we got. And I think that's probably true. And the one thing that they're pointing to are the joint exercises. Now, I can't deny that I said on before these very microphones that I thought that the joint exercises with South Korea were provocative. And today, extraordinarily, the president, who called him Rocket Man and everything else, said, yeah, they're provocative. They were too provocative, and it cost us too much money. Amazing.
I think it's about costing too much money. But for him.
Well, some people were worried that one of the parts of the U.S. Concessions would be removing troops from South Korea. And there was no talk of that. If the troops are there and things kind of cool off and become a little hostile, we could always introduce more war games, so to speak. I mean, it's just another chit in the whole bargaining that goes back and forth, the deal making that Trump loves so much.
JP, go ahead.
Well, they do seem to be working with carrots as opposed to sticks now with Pyongyang, and that's something that hasn't been done as much in the past, and we'll see whether this actually does yield some positive progress in our relationship with them. But I saw a lot more carrots than sticks in yesterday, and it was a positive news cycle for Trump, which he has so few of, and so you have to think that's a win for him.
That's true.
And in listening to the coverage this morning, I agree with you. And watching it last night, you think, well, this could be a positive. I mean, if anything we can do to bring some sort of stability to a part of the world that is lacking that, amen. But the actions over the weekend at the G7 with our allies still seems to overshadow so much of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And we hear that in the coverage from even on Fox, of people talking about, okay, we're doing well here and this went well, but why couldn't that same amount of careful choreography go into a meeting with our allies?
My remarks would be, why indeed? You know, what was it that Trump thought would be to his advantage by ticking off all of these Western democratic leaders in going into this meeting? I think the name of the game is you keep everybody hopping on one foot. And you there was a point in his press conference today when he started talking about how he loved each of them, each of the democratic leaders, and it was only that Trudeau had said something bad about him when he thought he was on the plane and not watching, as if I wasn't going to hear about that. And by the way, I don't think it ever happened either. So, you know, he's always looking for a provocation, a reason to fight.
I mean, it's worth noting, and I don't want to get away too far from what happened in North Korea last night, but it is... He agreed to the communique at the G7. He agreed to it. It wasn't until
after. And then he took his marbles and went home.
Well, he was already on his way home, and then he got ticked off.
You know, but this is the problem with our government at this point. Nobody knows really what he's going to do next. He agrees to something, then he says no, and then everybody's got to cover for it and figure out how to spin it properly.
Sure.
So
nothing
that
means
he doesn't
anything.
Look bad. Nothing he says means anything, because you can't count on the credibility or the veracity of whatever he says.
Well, don't you think that the other leaders of the democracies that we're allied with are sort of just taking this with a grain of salt, wondering what's going to happen to him after the midterm elections? Yeah. He may be completely neutralized, depending on how that goes, or whether he even runs for re-election or wins re-election in 2020. I mean, you got to take the long view here. But I agree. The problem is inconsistency and the inability of the United States to make a commitment and then change political parties or change people in the White House or in the Congress and then revoke that and change it and pull it out. I mean, they've come to the sad conclusion that the United States is not reliable, and we're giving up our role.
That's right.
We're giving up our role as the leader of the free world.
That's right.
Handing it over.
Right. It's Angela Merkel. It's Justin Trudeau. His stock has risen astronomically. Even Doug Ford, the brother of the drunk and now deceased mayor of Toronto.
Oh, yes.
Rob Ford,
I can't remember his name. Even Doug Ford, who's a conservative and the leader of the Conservative Party in Canada, are standing behind Trudeau. So his stock is going up. It's going to be interesting. And the more that these other people's stock goes up as world leaders, the more Baby will be felt he's being put in a corner and he'll lash out.
Well, on the other hand, you cannot be anything but at least hopeful that what went on in Singapore will lead to something positive.
But this was a plus for Trump.
Yes.
And Trump's numbers will go up as a result of this. And that's why he stood there for an hour and 5 minutes and then said, you know, the estimable or whatever he called her, the incredible Sarah Huckabee Sanders, how can I go for a few more minutes, Sarah, as if Sarah would have a thing to say about whether this was going to happen. He couldn't get enough of being up on that stage.
He likes cameras. There are a lot of cameras. I think 2,500 cameras.
That's what he lives for.
Loves cameras.
Well, yes and no. I mean, he has not been an exemplar, I think, of somebody who interacts well with the press. You know, I mean, it's true.
Yeah, but he had a lot of foreign press there.
But he likes being the
center of
the
attention.
Focus of attention. Yes. The center of attention, the focus of the cameras. He likes the ratings. Because he sees everything in terms of ratings, and this is about making better ratings than he did as when he was on The Apprentice.
And I see he sat down for a one-on-one interview with George Stephanopoulos.
Oh, that
which,
should be fun.
Which will be airing.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll, I assume, have letters, people, I think, writing in, so we'll hear from you as well. If you haven't written in yet, you still have time. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this short break. You know, I've been doing the show for a long time, and you learn things as you spend quality time during the breaks. And one of the things that I learned is Mike can do amazing Muppet impressions.
Okay, give us one, Mike.
And Sesame Street.
Give us one.
Me Cookie Monster, me love Cookie.
How about me love Rugalach, because that's what Barry did yesterday.
You know what? Screw the rest of the show. I just want to hear
Mike
do it.
Let's do more.
Mike, we want you to just do all of your commentary in like an Ernie voice.
How about Grover?
No, I think I need to be me.
Oh,
sadly.
Well, and Green. You can do it.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
I never thought I could love you any more than I already do, but there you go.
My grandchildren love that.
Well, I bet they do. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Alan Chartok, Mike Spade, J.P. Miller, and Libby Post on the show. We have letters, not surprisingly. panel@wamc.org is where you can send yours, and here goes Alan.
You know, I was just thinking about our conversation, Joe, that we were just having, and the wealth of stuff that you have done in the past. Mm-hmm. There really ought to be one part of the roundtable, you know, the program in which you delve back into history and say, we did this, we did this, we did this.
Oh, that would...
Because it would be terrific.
If only we had an archive.
But you do.
Yes.
Oh, but you do.
I think you should write a... Sometimes
it's hard to find the stuff.
I think you should write a book.
And what?
The people I've spoken to.
Yeah.
That's the that's the title.
No, I agree with Lily.
The conversations I've had.
No, I don't. Let's
I loved you with Sophia Loren. That was perfect.
Show.
That was really fun.
All right.
Okay, boss, you want me to proceed? Okay.
Yes, please
Mike,
do.
Mike says, allies and the fire department. Donald Trump seems to attach a dollar value to our alliances. If alliances were a balance sheet, Trump would see them as liabilities. Mm-hmm. One example is that he said canceling the joint exercises with South Korea would save money. Using that logic, local governments might consider eliminating fire departments. The cost of a department far outweighs the number of fires that are fought. The example is silly, but so is Trump's rationale about alliances, and that's from Mike in Glens Falls.
Well, he said the same thing about NATO, that it was costing us too much money.
And that we were paying too much. Yeah, right. That we were paying too much. And Matt says, thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe and panel, for staying up watching the coverage. I don't have the stomach to watch and letting us know what went down. I will toast you with my next five-hour energy drink. Matt, P.S., kidding. Do not drink five-hour energy drink.
No, you shouldn't drink that stuff. No, that's bad.
No, that's true. All right, here we go. And then Janice says, Summit, I truly believe the only reason Trump decided to attempt North Korean detente is because President Obama told him this would be his most difficult problem. So, of course, he has to show off how easy, in capital letters, this was. Janice. Well, you know, I tell you, his hatred for Obama and his competitiveness with Obama is something that just doesn't sit right with me. I just don't understand how that gets him anything.
Given the birther controversy that he started, I mean, I think it's seeped in racism and it continues to this day and is sometimes quite overt and sometimes a dog whistle to his base. And
the man is out and out racist, and he knows how to use it. You know, all you need to do is look on Facebook or look, you know, in different places, and I see these horrible stories and these news stories coming up from various places of the outright racism that his rhetoric has unleashed in this country, and how people are saying, and you see the videos, people are saying to somebody with an accent in a store, you need to get out of here. This isn't your country. This is my country. This is what he's unleashed.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to a White House correspondence dinner where Obama was speaking.
Right.
And,
absolutely.
And made fun of Trump,
him.
Essentially.
Right.
And Trump was seething. You know, that's been caught on video and left early. And it seemed right after that the birther thing came along. And, mm-hmm. and it just seems to be an obsession to discredit Obama and everything that Obama achieved. And you know, the motivation.
It's as if he's the Prime Minister of Canada.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. and the, you know, in an odd kind of way, this engagement with North Korea, which can be a very positive thing, is partly, it seems, to show that he can do something that Obama failed to do and presidents before Obama failed to do. The risk, of course, is that this puts the president, this 33, 34-year-old tyrant, who a dictator who had his uncle carted away and blown up and had his brother murdered, you know, on an equal footing with the president of the United States. And that's problematic. And yet, I kind of hope it leads to a de-escalation and cooling off of that part of the world. It's weird.
Well, Trump not only spends a lot of time criticizing Obama, he also spends a lot of time criticizing George W. Bush and what he did in his presidency. So, sure, he does spend a lot of time criticizing Obama, but also Bush.
And the reason is because that type of Republican, that class of Republican, basically, you know, has eschewed this fellow and said he's not worthy.
Well,
and he hates that.
And don't you think it's also personal, too? I mean, the Bush family has not been,
right.
has been very outspoken in their distrust.
Hey, guess who's 94 today?
Well, that's
really?
George Herbert Walker Bush.
Yeah, that's
yes.
great.
Right. No, but that's exactly what I meant, Joe. That's exactly the point.
I mean, they didn't want him at the funeral. They, you know, it was.
Melania did a great job.
Yeah. I mean, it's really. Everything he
Barbara
does
Bush's
is
funeral,
is
know.
Right. Everything he does is based out of hate and anger.
So Naomi, who is a frequent contributor here, wrote a letter called "The Real Reason." Good morning, panel. She says, "Now we know that Trump is up, what Trump is up to, and why he flew out of the G7 early. Our destructive president doesn't care about jobs, living wages, health care, and rule of law, consumer protection, public schools, or gender equality. What he ran to Singapore for was for himself, his family, and friends. He put in the cabinet and judge positions. There's no money. There's no money to investment here because there is little return. But North Korea is wide open and profits are potentially sky high. And then concludes, we need to lock this guy up. That's from Naomi.
For what?
Well, you know, I think turnabout is fair play. That's what they were yelling about Hillary.
Yeah,
yeah, I think
that's what this is. Okay, and then and I think there are a lot of things to lock him up for, to be honest with you, Joe. But
tons.
Right, but you got to prove it, right?
Well, you know, there's a guy named Mueller, and he's getting kind of
close.
Well,
I get that, but I'm just saying you can't lock somebody up until you prove your
process.
Well,
due process.
You know, talk to all the men of color that are sitting in Rikers that haven't had a trial yet, and then we can talk about whether you can lock somebody
up. I don't think you should in any case.
Yeah, I know.
That's my point.
I get it, but it's still happening.
Okay, so the Reverend Jeffrey writes, so once again, Kim lies and gives up nothing, and the, quote, great dealer maker, it says, got nothing but gave up war games, saying it will save us money to save face. Yep. And then Aaron writes about Libby. Libby, question mark. Good morning, panel. I thought there was a special place in hell for women who didn't support women. I guess that's only true if it's a woman you support.
That's invoking Madeleine Albright's comments about women not supporting Hillary.
Right. And, you know, I never supported Anita Bryant or Mirabel Morgan or Phyllis Schlafly or Eva Braun either. You know, so there are times when I will stand up.
You and your principles.
I know. It's horrible. It's just horrible.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have other topics to discuss, a lot of stuff to discuss. Let's get to our friend Jeff Sessions when we get back. We'll talk about that and much more. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Listening to the music of Grizzly Bear, who will be performing at Mass Mocha on Saturday the 16th, massmocha.org.
Irving Bear will not be with
Irving Bear will be in Great Barrington performing somewhere. Neighbors
turning over
you know.
Garbage cans somewhere.
massmocha.org to find out more about Grizzly Bear. Some good music. Great music coming out of there, and we'll hear some more later on in just a few minutes. Alan has a few more letters. We'll do those, and we'll move on to other stuff.
Okay, Paul writes, panel, good morning, esteemed panel. Why am I becoming suspicious?
I don't know.
Parenthesis, why indeed? I keep thinking that this whole North Korea situation could be influenced by Putin and Xi. When things are looking too hot for Trump here in America and a blue wave appears imminent, a global situation occurs to garner a big plus for the administration because of the blunting of a blue wave. The first of how many October surprises starting in June?
Well,
Paul.
Everyone's going to see an incredible uptick in their health care premiums. And that's going to be a little more important to them than what goes on in North Korea.
Interesting. We're told here at WMCR's may actually be going down.
Oh, mine's going up.
Well, so the state, the health insurance companies around the state all applied for their increases. The average increase is going to be 24% on health care plans.
Increase.
There's one health plan that's popular that's going to be up 39%.
That's Fidelis. It got bought.
And the reason they believe that is because they expect for people that were individually enrolled in Obamacare, now that the mandate is no longer there, that 37% of those people are going to drop their coverage because they didn't want Obamacare.
And then when they are sick, the cost of their care gets absorbed by the hospitals, which results in raising the price for everybody.
That's right.
We don't pay this way, we pay that way now.
Right.
Elaine says, verification. Dear panel, my concern is that it will be so important to Trump to tout this agreement as successful that he won't want to know or will lie about any violations by North Korea. Interesting. Interesting letter. Okay. And Stephen says, path forward. Dear roundtable panel, isn't China the real power behind the meeting and the path forward? The rest is all just self-aggravating theater. Thank you, Stephen. Mm. Jim says, Trump and North Korea. Good morning, esteemed panel. Whoa, that's getting big. Assuming things with North Korea continue to go and ultimately end well, I wonder how Trump will react when he's commended for furthering President Obama's pivot to Asia. Any thoughts? No, your letter is the thought. And then Jill says, this is great, but hi, panel. The fact that the U.S. and North Korea are talking to each other and working on peace agreements is terrific. I wish it was some other president doing it, but I'll give credit where it's due. It's still a very good thing, a major breakthrough. But so help me, if Trump gets the Nobel Peace Prize for this, I'm going to be seriously ill. And that's what Jill says. But before you worry about that, Jill, I do think not so fast. I mean, right now we have the same play that the North Koreans have been giving to the West for years. They've been saying they're going to do things that they don't do. So let's see if that happens before we give them a lot of credit.
That's right.
All right. Okay. And now we will go to a letter from Carol. I respectfully disagree with Mike Spain's timetable on Trump's hatred of Obama. Trump got on the birther thing before Obama got him in the White House. Got him in the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Thanks for the roundtable. And that's from Carol. You have anything to say in your own defense, sir?
Carol might be right. But we know the result. Trump hates Obama.
Yeah. Media project last week, I had to admit I was wrong about a tiny little thing. And they said, can you say it? I said, I was wrong. Okay. Matt says, please stop with the accusations of racism. It is sloppy and exceedingly unprofessional. Racism is as racism does. Nothing you've said this morning supports any of your accusations of racism against Trump or anyone else you have slandered.
What? I'm sorry. That's I don't understand the letter.
The letter is saying Libby called him an out-and-out racist and that he's not. This is Matthew.
I do not know how you say you see the actions of what he did with President Obama, because Libby and I were in agreement on this. What he did was
I'll add my own name to that.
Okay,
to the petition.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems to me that looking at what he did on the birther charge, looking at what he did after Charlotte.
Look at what he's doing to the children who are coming to the border. They're being put in large dog
kennels
with mats on the floor, If that's not racist because you don't want more people of color coming into this country, I don't know what it is.
I don't think it matters what race the kids are.
But all these people are people of color. They're not white. They're not Caucasian.
The picture that you're referring to happened during the Obama years. That's one. Two, I would say that calling Trump a racist, which is fine. If you believe Trump's a racist, that's fine. But what people hear, Trump supporters hear that as saying, that means that you're calling me a racist.
That's exactly right.
Because, you know,
I won't go that far.
I will.
I don't go that far.
Well, I do.
I'm not saying that you're saying that, but I think that's what the 62 million Americans for Trump, that's what they hear, and they're offended by it. But there's certainly plenty of evidence to back up your charge.
But there are new pictures now.
I'd like to finish.
There are new pictures. There are new pictures. Not just the Obama pictures.
No, there are new pictures of children being taken away from their parents. There are pictures of kids in these large kennel type things. I mean, it's just disgusting.
Right, but it did happen under Obama as well. This isn't like a new thing that Trump said, all right, we're doing kennels for the illegal immigrants. That was something that happened under Obama.
Obama didn't snatch children away from their parents.
Right, but he had the kennels.
I don't know what he had. He had the pictures that I saw from the Obama administration were large rooms, not kennel type. Structures.
Right. Well, we can.
I need to finish this.
Yes.
Letter.
Please,
sorry.
Go on with the letter.
Sorry.
And this letter is very critical of you, Libby, and of us, and that's why I want to read it.
Okay.
I am not a Trump.
I agree with you 100%.
I am not a Trump apologist, but liberals are becoming more and more irrelevant because they declare everyone who disagrees with them is racist. Obama campaign is and a promise of change. Not surprisingly, many people disagreed with that change. Rise of the Tea Party, the Red Wave, etc. There is no evidence that they were racist. It is reckless and unprofessional to slander everyone who disagrees with you as racist, sexist, homophobic. Insert progressive slander of the day, and there will be no blue wave this fall because Americans are sick of it. Yours, Matt.
The same argument was being made yesterday after Robert De Niro at the Tony Awards saying F Trump. Which we did not mention.
Right.
And the fact that there was a standing ovation after and after he said it, and it went on for a long time. And many people said that, you know, that was showing liberals in a very bad light and would be an indicator that people would rebel against that type of behavior. I wish Robert De Niro did not say it. With that said, when he did say it, I laughed like hell.
Well, I have a question for you, Joe, because you know more about this stuff than anybody I know. So here comes
about the Tonys. You may be right, but go ahead.
About the Tonys,
and you're straight. It's amazing.
And about broadcasting. So here's what I didn't understand: if they didn't know at ABC that he was going to do then how come we didn't hear it? In other words,
There's a delay.
There's just a delay.
Oh, there's just like an eight second delay.
Like last week when Mike went off on a rant, profanity ridden rant.
Yeah. You
remember that, Mike?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and
speaking for Kermit. Yes,
it was Rosemary years ago, actually. But anyway, you press the button and then it knocks it out, and that's what happened. Although in Australia, weirdly, they heard it. They heard it in Australia because they didn't have the...
which is where you can get the video.
Because they're like 12 hours ahead of us. So
well, that's... the thing that made me weirdly is I give CBS $6 a month. I don't know why. For CBS All Access. Yeah. Because I have to watch The Good Fight because Christine Baranski is amazing. And yes, I'm straight. So,
we watched...
That's a lot to answer.
Yeah. We watched The Birdcage the other night.
So did you hear it? You didn't hear it.
But no, it didn't hear it. I'm thinking, well, my God, for six bucks you think I should hear
unedited,
it?
Right?
Yeah, and not only that, Mike, I'm sorry for going off on this tangent.
No, I'm glad you are because I asked the question.
But... Not only that, Mike, but what was really upsetting me is I have my laptop on and I'm watching the New York Times critics, Jesse Green and Ben Brantley, go back and forth as they do it. Well, they were about a minute ahead of the feed that I was watching.
Oh,
so it would come up and it would say, Tony Shalhoub just won Best Actor. And I'm like, no, he didn't. They haven't even read the nominees yet. It's very annoying. But anyway.
I didn't know about De Niro until I read it in the newspaper this morning. So he got up and
said F Trump.
Yeah, he said.
Forget dump Trump. Now it's F Trump.
Oh, he did.
I didn't say that in the morning newspaper.
Francis Trump.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yes.
Francis Trump, right.
And then, right.
You can see it on Facebook.
Right. And then, there was a huge uproar.
Everybody stood up and applauded.
Yeah. Okay. What else? Are we have anything else? We're good for the moment. Let's take a break. We'll have a palate cleanser, and we'll come back. Ray just raised his eyebrows at palate cleanser.
Is that what we call it?
No, we don't. Yeah, that's what they're calling it these days.
No, the best thing Ray ever said was when we were about to go to the BBC, and he says, "And now for some British news." Had to be there.
Eggs in Germany will be. No, I'm only kidding.
Was that lost in translation, Ray? All right, Ray Graff is next. We'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Libby Post. We will return right after this. Grizzly Bear playing Mass Mocha on Saturday, June 16th. MassMocha.org for more information. Just a quick reminder, because Sarah told me to remind you. Sarah is our wonderful producer. Sarah said, hey, keep your letters short. Remember, we want to get to as many letters as possible. People always complain, you didn't get to my letter. Well, yeah. It's because if they're too long, then we got to edit them on the fly, and we don't want to do that.
And also because we get 1,000 of them, and we read a dozen of them.
That's right. So keep them short and to the point and all that good stuff.
And don't be calling us up and saying, why? And don't be calling us up and saying, why don't you like me?
That happens all the time. I answer at least 5 or 6 of those messages a week.
Don't be calling us up.
Yeah.
Why don't you like me?
Well, it's a plot if you don't read their letter.
Yeah. Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah. Okay, Alan, let's go to the letters and make people happy.
John, this will make everybody happy. John, okay. On Jeff Sessions. While domestic violence is a very sad reality, we cannot be expected to take in everyone from every nation suffering from it. Jeff Sessions is also correct in stating that claim is way too open to abuse. My question to the panel is, do you believe we should have completely open borders? Because that's the impression I get from liberals.
Oh, dear. We'll probably talk about the Jeff Sessions story, but just briefly, in this particular case, a woman who was the victim of horrible domestic violence turned to the authorities in a country that is corrupt and dangerous and cannot find relief. That is the kind of person we should come to the aid of. And that's not opening your borders and letting everybody in. That's coming to the aid of somebody who is a victim of violence, and the remedy is to let them, give them asylum.
And you know, Mike, it's a very small number of people who apply.
It's a red herring. It's a red herring.
That, right. You know, one out of whatever.
It's but a complete red herring.
Because just think, this woman is from a poor country. The victim of domestic violence, she manages to get out. How many men? I mean, we see women here not leaving. How many women in those, that kind of situation, could manage to actually get out and walk their way, or however she got to the border? I can't be thousands upon thousands upon thousands.
No, but they portray everybody as being having some bogus excuse to get over the border. And in this particular case, it's from a country, El Salvador, that the U.S. backed the military dictators for decades, and they really ruined the country.
They did.
And now, because they have a horrible criminal justice system, this woman is a victim of it, and we're going to kick her out.
Right? And Norm writes, allies, where are our elected leaders who seem not to care at all about our long-term allies? We seem to have a flaw in our system when one man, elected by a true minority of the citizenry, can undo relationships of national security. And here comes a bunch of capital letters, and there is no outrage and blast back by any of our Senate or House. It should be deafening. Thanks for the show, Norm from Clifton Park. Well, I do know that they're stepping up right now. We're seeing people like, you know, Senate Majority Leader and others making comments. Okay. John says, good morning, panel. Love the roundtable. But. Did I hear right? Did Libby just equate support for Cynthia Nixon with support for the right wing and homophobia Anita Bryant and Phyllis Schlafly?
No.
OMG,
no.
Eva Braun?
No.
That's not what I said.
His post was just saying that just because you're a woman does not automatically get you support.
She was reacting to a letter, which was wrong. Which was saying a good woman will never criticize another woman.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for coming to my rescue.
Consider it our privilege.
Your chivalrous privilege.
Well, chivalry.
No, we're mansplaining to the woman who wrote it.
Oh, are you? Okay.
That's what we're doing.
That's what that is.
And then says John, if I heard wrong, I apologize. But if she did, well, she didn't. Well, that is such a disgusting, horrendous comment to be beyond belief. Shame on you, Libby Post. Wait a second. If you heard wrong, you did hear wrong.
Right.
So cut it out.
Right.
Okay.
Well, then stop reading.
keep them short.
You make a very good
point. You can edit that later.
Right. Edit.
Okay. Allison says, children, these days I only write when someone who shall be nameless says something completely off the wall. Libby spoke up, but the whole panel should shut him down for it. Most of the teens coming here on Obamacare came by themselves. Most were settled with family members in the U.S. There were no three-year-olds coming by themselves, and Obama was not taking the babies away. This is a new thing done by Trump and Sessions. They are torturing children and moms, spreading this lie, and that Obama did it. P.S. It's okay because they're illegal. Makes you complicit. Allison.
I wince a little bit at the word torture, but in fact, I wince a lot at the word torture. But
well,
okay.
You know, for a 3 or 4 year old to be I'm not endorsing it, I'm just saying you have to be careful. That's torturous for that little kid.
Maybe your point is so well taken. I have 2 3-year-old grandchildren.
Right.
Soon to be 4.
And what would, you know?
You know, and you look at these kids and they're bonding with their parents and all the rest of it. You take them away from a parent?
Right.
Whoa.
And where do these kids go?
And so Andy says, end game. Doesn't it make sense that the Russians, North Koreans, and China would like to give the most destructive president to the American way of life a diplomatic win to ensure he continues to destroy the United States? Remember, Khrushchev said, we will destroy America from within. Best, Andy.
I thought he said, we will bury you.
We'll bury you. That's what he said.
He had the shoe off at the UN.
Yeah, Khrushchev, famously.
Just back on the immigration thing. I mean, I think Sessions and the Trump administration is trying to send a clear message. You're not welcome here, and if you come, we're going to do bad things to you and, you know, take your children and put them somewhere else.
So he is saying that domestic and gang violence are not grounds for asylum. The attorney general on Monday made it all but impossible for asylum seekers to gain entry into the United States by citing fears of domestic abuse or gang violence, and a ruling that could have a broad effect in the flow of migrants from Central America. Mr. Sessions' decision in a closely watched domestic violence case is the latest turn in a long-running debate over what constitutes a need for asylum. He reversed an immigration appeals court ruling that granted it to a Salvadorian woman who said she had been sexually, emotionally, and physically abused by her husband. Relatively few asylum seekers are granted permanent entry into the United States. In 2016, for every applicant who succeeded, more than 10 others also sought asylum. That according to data from the Department of Homeland Security.
Well, if people don't think the Republicans have a war on women, this is a perfect example of it. It is so morally bankrupt to do this.
Well, Libby, I have a question for you, which I've asked you before, but I would ask you again. Mm-hmm. An awful lot of women voted for Donald Trump.
I know.
Now, how do you explain that?
I don't. I can't. They voted against their own interests. And as you have said many, many times, the middle class either votes to perceiving that it's going to bring them up, or they take the hand down and they vote a different way to help people move up. And they voted against their own interests, and some of them recognize that now. Some of them don't. You know, again, we'll see what happens when the premiums go up in October, right before the midterm elections. But I can't answer for all the women. I can't answer for the writer, and I can't answer for all the women who voted for him. There's plenty of women who have their own internalized misogyny and couldn't see voting for Hillary because she was a woman. But this is what we get.
Well, you know, it was Emmett Till, right, who was accused of having whistled
right.
at a woman and
right.
lynched as a result
That's
of
right.
that.
And that
there
woman
may
was
be
complicit.
Some, there may be some of that there, you know, which is, you know, this is... And it goes right back to your racist, racist explanation.
Yeah. There's no, you know, there's no statute of limitations or sexual, gender, you know, specificity around politics. You know, not all women are progressive and see the good in people, and not all men are bad and don't see the good in people. So there are going to be women who are racist, who are homophobic, and who will vote for Donald Trump again if he gets through the process, you know, because that's who they are. And I can't explain it. All I can tell you is that he did not win the popular vote.
He did not. And
there are many, many, many women whose political fuse was lit on Election Day 2016, and now they're running.
Let us talk about, from Roshni, who wrote us a note, Trump is a racist. Trump is racist. Dear esteemed panel, sorry, Matthew, as a minority, I can say that Trump is absolutely racist. Libby is correct. So supporters of Trump are latent racist because they are willing to put their own wealth, et cetera, above the basic human rights of people of color. What Democrats need to do is to congratulate Trump for following in the footsteps of Obama and fulfilling something Obama started. It would make Trump so angry. And that's best from Rush. Okay.
I just worry about using the broad brush that everybody who voted for Trump is a racist right. or everybody who voted for Trump is misogynist or whatever or homophobic. Those are characteristics that only probably apply to a percentage, and I'll bet it's a minority percentage. I think people were scared. I think people didn't like the other candidate because Trump's people were so effective of undermining her, and the people in Congress were. I mean, you can get into a million explanations.
A lifelong Republican who would never find themselves voting for a Democrat.
Right. I mean, all kinds of things. And people who also would benefit from, who are angry about something, like if you're in a state where the jobs have been dwindling or something. There's a whole bunch of explanations for why people voted for Trump. And to paint the broad brush is, I think, it's just wrong. It's factually incorrect. There's just many other reasons why people voted the way they voted.
But he won by demonizing the other.
Yeah.
And that's
true. And I think people
racist.
Bought into that.
Yes.
And others would never have voted for Hillary Clinton in a million years, and others voted for Trump maybe because they thought we needed a change and we needed to shake things up. They were unhappy with the way things were. And, you know,
there's
he's delivering on that promise.
That's true. There's a lot of people.
Hello? They're delivering on that promise.
And I think, too, the two big issues that he ran on were both immigration and trade. And you see that his arguments with the leaders of Western Europe and the leader of Canada is something that he is delivering that message to his base, that he's fighting for them on trade, and on this Sessions decision that he is being tough on immigration. Those, I think, were the two biggest issues in which he won blue-collar voters in Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin on trade and on immigration. And he thinks that that's how he can potentially get reelected. And so they're going to keep hitting on immigration for the next couple years. They're going to keep hitting on trade. And those are battles that Trump wants to fight. And he thinks he's winning on those when he's talking about them.
Except the tariffs are going to put some of those very people who voted for him out of work.
Sure. But I mean, that's sort of another issue, that it doesn't work out the way that you hope it works out.
Right.
But there are just a myriad reasons why he won and why people voted for him. And you can't say it's just everybody's racist. It's not true.
Well, it's an interesting question whether everybody is racist.
Well, I think every.
In other words,
I think
does everybody have within them the seeds of racism?
Yes. White people are raised with privilege, and we're raised with certain ways of thinking about things. And
saying,
it's about
I'm
having
not saying it's so.
A consciousness.
But I'm just simply saying.
We certainly have biases that we are unaware of and need to be more aware of.
Indeed.
Everybody does.
Let's go back to some letters. Maybe just one.
Okay. Panel. on the matter of kennels from Bob, the frequent letter writer Bob. Panel, according to Michelle Goldberg in today's New York Times, during the Obama era, the cells in question were used for older kids who crossed the border unaccompanied. Putting five-year-olds in these cages, irrespective of whether their parents are with them, is strictly a Trump and Sessions policy, try as they may to pretend otherwise. Bob from Oldham.
Anybody?
That's all I have.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have just about 5 minutes. Let's talk about the Kushners. Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump made at least $82 million in outside income last year.
That's unbelievable.
While serving in the White House, that according to filings. $82 million. This seems to be, we were talking about why aren't people screaming at the top of their lungs over something. Why aren't people upset about this? Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, the president's daughter and son-in-law, brought in at least $82 million in outside income while serving as senior White House advisors during 2017, according to financial disclosure firm Forms released on Monday. Trump earned $3.9 million from her stake in the Trump International Hotel in Washington and more than $2 million in severance from the Trump Organization. Yes, she got severance.
It's amazing.
She's out of the Trump Organization.
She's out of the
She's
Trump
Organization.
So she got...
You won't see her around the Trump Organization anymore.
You're fired. And you get severance.
And she's getting a lot of money. Part of that $82 million is what she's getting off, as we say in parlance, off of the Washington Hotel.
Yeah, that's right.
While Kushner reported over $5 million in income from Quail Ridge, a Kushner apartment complex acquired last year in Plainsboro, New Jersey, the filings show how the couple are collecting immense sums from other enterprises while serving in the White House, an extraordinary income flow that ethics experts have warned would create potential conflicts of interest. Both Kushner and Trump have given up daily oversight of their companies as they work as unpaid senior advisors to the president, but it doesn't seem like they need that paycheck because they're doing okay otherwise.
You know,
God,
warm schmormed. I mean, the fact of the matter is, here you got the ethics guy saying a potential ethical problem. Give me a break, right, will you, about potential. You need some guy up there with a ruler to smack people over the hand, and we don't have that.
I'm not defending. I think what they were saying is that from the very beginning, they were saying this was going to be problematic, and they're saying that they were proved right.
And my point, Joe, is that we don't have people who are able to enforce these ethical decisions. What we have are people, so-called experts, who warn of the potential problems.
That's what happens.
Does
when the people
have to file any of these financial disclosure forms? I mean, how much has President Trump benefited during his presidency?
We'll never know because he won't release his tax return.
Well, no, when the audit's done, we'll know at
end
of the audit.
You know, the audit, I think that's going to be done in, 2024?
Yeah, that'll probably
Forbes be. Reported at the end of May this year that Trump's net worth dropped by $100 million last year.
To what? From what?
Well, from 2.9 to 2.8 billion.
How did they determine that?
That's what they spend their time
they
doing,
do that
the experts
thing.
At
they
Forbes.
Do that
All
sort
right.
Of thing.
Okay.
Okay, so we heard from Otha, who says, what is racist? Hello, panel. I'm a black male, and for me, a racist is anyone who supports, encourages, or willingly allows racist behaviors. I suppose we could say that there is active racist and the passive racist. Trump is both actively and passively racist. I also believe you could insert the word sexist, and my standards stands. This applies to institutions and individuals. It still boggles my mind that racists do not like to be called that. Thank you. What? People like to be called racist? That boggles your mind?
And then, no, that people don't acknowledge that they're passive racists by permitting it and letting it continue and doing nothing to reverse the impact of it. You become a passive racist, I think the writer was saying, and he's got a good point. I mean, to tolerate racism is to passively approve it.
You're complicit in it.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Gary says, refugees who will help this country, I think anyone who has the fortitude to walk many hundreds of miles across the border to escape whatever they are escaping would be glad to work for a paycheck and out of work many Americans. That should not always be considered victims. Sometimes they are assets to this country that we haven't met yet. Thank you, Gary from Western Massachusetts. Okay, thank you, Gary. And then, Richard, racism. Dear esteemed panel. Other than those, somehow the word got out that we should be called a steam panel.
That's lovely.
Yeah. Well, I think there seems to be a feeling that if they call us a steam panel,
we should.
The letter will get read.
Yeah.
Well, they're right.
Or that will raise our behavior.
No problems with
this
that,
point yeah. forward, we're not rating any unless it says esteem.
Dear esteem. Okay. Other than those few persons who openly identify themselves as racist, we cannot know what is inside a person's heart, and therefore whether or not somebody is a racist. However, we can and should point to racist statements, behavior, writings, and policy positions that make logical predictions on what to expect when a person who is engaged in such things in the future. Richard.
I think Richard makes an excellent point.
Are we done?
We are done when you read the next letter.
Okay, here we go. Good morning.
Good morning.
Panel. JP is
esteem,
wrong.
Please.
If you vote for and support an out-
letter.
If you vote for and support an outright racist with his racist policy, you are a racist. If you deny that Trump is a racist, then you're not in denial, but you're okay with his racist views, policies, and see nothing wrong with racism. Then you are a racist, says Keith. One more fast.
Go ahead.
Okay. Brucey says, De Niro gave us our version of red meat. The people feigning outrage over civility are, as they say, pearl clutching. Trump is outrage prime after all. These are disheartening times, and little joyous roaring now and then does us good.
We're out of time. My thanks to Alan and Mike and JP and Libby, and thank you very much. We will return with more Roundtable after this.